Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens.
So, Naina, what an absolutely remarkable lady.
Yeah, I tell you what, she's crammed quite a lot into a relatively young person, isn't she? Really, lots of stuff. I really like the quitting isn't failure.
Yes, yes.
I think hopefully that will resonate with people. People think, oh yeah, maybe.
And also for somebody who, in the early days, probably would have been a bit timid and quiet.
Yeah,
she's really come out, and we talked about being comfortable with being uncomfortable. And she's a great example of somebody who's really evolved in her own way over a period of time to now have, you know, her dentistry, a side business and other projects on the go as well.
And a very deep who she'd want to meet.
Yes, towards the end of the episode. Yeah. So no fast forwarding through to that.
No, very deep.
If this is your first time joining us, you're very welcome. Thank you very much indeed. If you've been before, thank you for coming back. If you could subscribe, that would be wonderful because it just helps us get a little bit more found across the podcast channels. Thank you very much indeed. What another wonderful day.
It is another Dentology podcast. Don't you love them?
I do. And it's funny because when we started this and it kind of heads under the banner of the business of dentistry, it's amazing how when you take clinical things off the table, how much is still left on the table.
Well, I think it's the business of dentistry, yeah. And it's a business, and there's lots of stuff that you need to be thinking about.
Mm. And today we're going to be talking about nicely. People and lifestyle and well-being and all that stuff. So we are fortunate. Today we have a guest. We have Dr. Sunaina Chandran, who's a dentist and also a lifestyle and body coach, which is interesting. And there's a very interesting story about how that segue happened in your career. So welcome. How are you doing?
Hi, Andy. Hi, Grace. I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
We're looking forward to it. Should be fun. Should be fun.
It will be great fun because you've got a really good story. I think
dentists, like a bit of pressure right at the beginning.
But I think dentists will relate to it because you are a dentist, but the other things that you're doing as well. And we know that health and well-being in dentistry is something that's so important.
Ooh,
and
definitely in
another world, we value and sell dental practices. So we get to see lots of dentists who, in some cases, cut their career short just because of back and neck issues and no longer able to work. So anything that we can do collectively to make sure that dentists stay in good shape, not just physically but also mentally, it means they can have a fulfilling career.
The more we talk about it, the more acceptable it becomes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But before we get to that, I believe there's clues as to who we become from our childhood. So was there a time you can look back on your childhood and say, that was the key moment? Or perhaps what was your childhood like?
Yeah, what was it like?
Childhood, growing up, I live with my mum and dad, have a younger brother, and come from an Indian background, Indian family. And so this might be quite typical to say, but I guess from a very young age, it was very instilled with me that education was important. Education was quite key. So I think I can remember exams and studying.
We have heard that Indian parents often say you can be an accountant, a lawyer, a dentist, or a failure. It's your
choice.
That's
pretty much summarizes everything. That's kind of what I remember. So I would say in terms of my childhood, I had very supportive parents. My parents were very involved in my education, in my choices, in terms of kind of work. So I was always just kind of in a place where I was trying to better myself and study. But at the same time, my parents were great in terms of they would take us on holidays regularly. We'd always go on holidays once or twice a year. So we'd get our kind of break time.
Did you do any sports?
I'm quite tall, so 5'9" and a half. My husband doesn't like me saying the half because
he's not 5'9", is he?
He doesn't allow me to wear slippers in the house. That's the main thing, because it adds that extra. So he's going to hate me for saying this. But
we've all got our issues.
Yeah, well, as you go out for a night out and you're in bare feet.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I never really get to wear heels that much, and I get to kind of wear my trainers and flip-flops, and it's easy life.
Right.
So in terms of sports, I enjoyed netball, played that at school. I'm not going to say I was a pro when I played for teams and stuff, but it was things that I enjoyed at school.
Yeah. Goal attack or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Goal defence or something.
Goal attack, goal shooter. And they always would kind of, on sports day, put me to do high jump and long jump because of like the long legs.
Because you're tall.
Basically, they're like, oh, you'll go right here. And then outside of that, again, my parents encouraged me to do karate lessons. So, watch out.
I'm glad this is on a podcast.
Yeah.
So it was some karate and kind of worked through that. And again, that was just, I don't remember me saying that's something that I definitely wanted to do, but it was like a thing that my parents said, oh, why don't you kind of get into that? So I did that for a couple of years. Mm. And then from there, I think it was more just wanting to get into some sort of exercise. My parents were always into a bit of exercise, quite healthy. So I was brought up in a kind of healthy environment, I'd say, an environment all about education and then holidays.
When did you want to become a dentist?
Good question. And it's not probably the most exciting answer, because I think when you're around like 17, 18 years old, for me personally, I don't think I had life figured out. I don't think I knew exactly what I wanted to do, what I was good at. I don't think many people do.
No, it's too early to ask people.
And I think it's a really tough. I think it's a really tough time for people, because actually, I think it goes back a step as well, because you need to start making, you know, big decisions around your GCSEs to give you access to the right A levels to get you to the right uni. Yeah. And you're in your mid-teens. And like you say, you're 17, 18, I don't really know what I want to do. There's people in their 30s, 40s, who still have never really found the thing that they could be doing.
I keep hoping.
Yeah.
And it's a big life decision, because I don't think you realise at the time how big a life decision it is, because you're like, I might end up committing the next 4 to 5 years of my life of going to a university, studying, and then kind of going into that career. So, again, like I said, I think most of my life up to the age of 23, 24, I was going through life with the support of my parents. So around 17 to 18, I was like, I don't know what to do. I know that I'm quite academic. I know that I was good at school and getting good grades. And so, again, as you said at the beginning of the podcast, parents kind of like said, you know, you've got accountancy, you've got law, you've got optom, medicine, dentistry, take your pick kind of thing.
As long as it's a pick of those.
And I think as well, I thought, like, I guess I didn't know any other career. So I thought, well, this must be one of those, has to be for me. What else? What else is there? So I did work experience in all those kind of areas.
In all of them. So you just choose.
It wasn't like weeks. It was like I kind of just like maybe went there for a day or two, did some shadowing, and I think I learned what wasn't for me. Like I wasn't a person who wanted to do loads of public speaking and presentations in front of people. I wasn't a person who was just going to sit at a desk all day on a computer. Finances and, you know, that all wasn't really ticking any boxes for me. And then I think I did go to a dental practice, and I really liked the very personalised one-on-one contact the dentist had with the patient. Like, you didn't have to speak to loads of people at once. You're with that person. It's very, I don't want to say intimate, but personal, and it's someone talking, listening, almost coaching a patient on how to look after themselves. And I remember mm-hmm. one lady come in and she was, you know, the typical in pain. She needed an extraction and she came in pain and she left out with her tooth out and really, really happy. And it was like that immediate gratification.
Yeah.
So with dentistry, I think I realized that like in that moment, in that half an hour, you could feel really kind of, you could do something great and feel really good about it as well. And I think like, you know, that was it. I spent a little bit more time with him and I was like, it seems like a hands-on profession. It seems you get to kind of speak to patients and build a good relationship. And potentially you get to make someone happy at the end of it as well. So that was nice.
Mm. Absolutely. Which dental school did you go to?
Leeds Dental Institute. Yeah. So
what's the rationale behind that?
Well, I think it was either between Bristol or Leeds. And I think like I can't quite remember. It may have come down to Leeds might be good for some nightlife.
Yep.
Fair enough. Leeds is the place to be, even though it's like I'm in London and it's like, I think I was really nervous about that. It was about, you know, 4 hours away from home. And again, you know how I said I'm very close to my family and in terms of how involved they are, like I think the decision to kind of go that far was really tough. And but yeah, somehow I chose Leeds because I thought I was going to get the best of like the lectures and the academics and like party time.
Right, yeah. And I think having that gap probably did help you get some separation and kind of, you know, grow up in your own
Mum
world.
Mum and Dad can't keep coming to see you every weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was your uni experience like?
Definitely, I would say it was like a shock to the system in terms of like at school, like I was a lot of the time towards the top of the class, good grades and everything like that. And then you get to dental school and everyone's good and everyone's top of the class. And I think I felt a little bit out of my element in terms of like just kind of where I was. And I struggled quite a bit in terms of exams and practicals and really realizing what have I let myself into, like this is now my career. So I think in my first year, I think I may have failed one exam, but I retook it and I was fine. I remember.
Did you party?
I did. Like I felt like I still studied as much as I could. Like I don't think I slacked, but I felt like even just the amount of information that you have to learn all by yourself kind of thing was quite tough. And then maybe, yeah, found that hard to balance around, you know, fitting in, making new friends, being in a new place, as well as trying to, you know, revise and nail all of your exams. I think that all of that.
It's a lot of new things, isn't it? Like a new location, new people, and a new way of learning in a way, which you, especially if you were sort of feeling not quite as smart as you felt maybe you were before, if that makes sense.
So, Naina, in terms of how it affected you, did you go into your shell or did it give you kind of the impetus to grow and kind of find out more about yourself and be comfortable in that situation?
I think I still felt determined because I must have carried on because I was determined not to fail, either not to let myself down, but to let my parents down. Like they put so much effort into kind of supporting me. And I do remember in third year, I got to a point I was like in a crown prep practical and I was like there till 6, 7 p.m. and everyone had gone and, you know, still finishing off my prep. And then I went to my personal tutor and I just kind of said, I don't think this is for me. I don't think I can do this anymore. And I remember she, you know, was very supportive. She's like, I completely understand. And she gave me options about like, why don't we try and reassess how you're feeling, you know, in a month or two. And if not, these are your options. And I even spoke to my mum about it and how I felt. And she was very supportive. And I think something in me was just like, not really determined to fail and just keep going kind of thing. It's very weird. I never knew that I only thought I had that mentality now with like my coaching business and everything, but I realized like if I felt like this during dental school, I clearly had that mentality then. I clearly was more resilient than I thought, and I don't think I've ever really thought about that until now.
And I think tenacity and resilience, it is one of those things. You can't read books about it. You can't talk to friends about it. It really has to be a first-hand experience. And perhaps that for you, yeah, it sounds like your childhood was amazing and your parents were incredibly supportive and you had holiday. Mm. It might have been that resilience and tenacity wasn't needed in your childhood years, because you know you had a great childhood. Your time at uni might have been that thing that kind of kicked in, which now you have your own business and many dimensions to your life. It's actually served you well. So in a weird way, you know, the lesson you learned at dental school wasn't just how to do crown preps; it was how to be resilient and how to have tenacity, which, from a life skill point of view, were great things to learn. Although they were probably hard at the time.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree.
Mm. So you qualify. Where'd you go and do your FD training?
Yeah, so I went to a practice in Aldershot, which I'd never heard of. Kind of got this kind of like name, Aldershot. Right, how far away is that from my house? It was about like an hour and a half away, and I lived out near there with them. There was two of us, two VTs in that practice. Right. And it was actually, I'm very, you know, grateful for the practice I was in. It was actually, on the outside, it was a church. It was a church converted into a dental practice.
So, oh, wow, amazing.
It was very quirky. And I was very lucky enough that within that dental practice, I think there were like three VT trainers. So each trainer had trained the other trainer. That's kind of like so much experience in there. So that was good. And I was with another colleague, another VT dentist, who was there, so we could kind of support each other. So yeah, that was a year of kind of starting out and into the real world, I guess.
Yeah. Do you remember your first unsupervised patient? Do you remember the first time that you were in the room with nobody looking over your shoulder?
I remember the one at dental school, if that's what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The one at dental school was it was perio clinic, and I asked him, how many times do you brush your teeth? And he said, if that, once a week. And I was like, oh my God, is this what I've let myself in for, kind of thing? But yeah, so that was a bit of a shock to be like, oh, my first patient is once a week. And
this not being funny, how can you get by in life brushing your teeth once a week?
Yeah, I know.
So you can't have a partner or many friends.
No. Or you just wear a mask all the time while you talk like this.
Yeah, I definitely had to double mask up
on my
teeth. And try to not get put off for what was to come for the rest of my life. that was interesting. We had really good, I think we had really good early exposure in Leeds. I think it was after first year, from second year, we were seeing patients. And then, you know, in VT, like first unsupervised patient, I honestly can't remember, but I think I was nervous at the time. But then,
it must be nervy, mustn't it?
Yeah, definitely. But knowing that you had that support around you, if you needed it, I think that was
which
helpful.
Is good.
It's like the first time you learn to drive, and if you know when you've done all your driving, and then the instructor says, "Right, off you go," and then you're like, "Oh, I'm now on my own in a car.
I'm responsible.
I could kill somebody if I get this wrong or myself." it's freaky.
So then bring us up to just pre-COVID, because obviously that was an interesting period for you. But pre-COVID, what was your work pattern like? Kind of where were you working? How many days were you doing?
Yeah.
You know, what was that period like?
So it changed quite a bit. I'd say after VT, I found a job which was about an hour away from home in Oxfordshire. Very busy mixed practice, corporate, UDAs, and it was 5 days a week, 8 to 5. So I think it felt like I was kind of thrown in the deep end from seeing like, I don't know, 6 patients a day during VT. Mm-hmm. And then you're seeing 30, 40 from day one with this. And I think at the beginning it was exciting to be like, oh, I'm working hard and getting some money and this is very exciting. And then I started to realize, wow, this is quite a lot. You know, I was feeling... I remember some days just coming home to my mom and just kind of just crying, I guess, or just it maybe some sort of release of emotion because it felt so intense in the day, the amount that you had to do. I remember at one point I started to get a lot of back and neck pain, and I even remember it got quite bad to the point where I was off work for 2 weeks lying on my floor because that was the only thing that was comfortable. So I think like the first couple of years it was exciting at the beginning, and then I realized like a bit of the reality of working in the NHS. But when I realized how it was impacting my well-being, I was very quick to be like, okay, I'm going to drop a day down. So I dropped Wednesdays and I worked Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays and Fridays. And over the last 10 years I've been a dentist, I've gone from 5 days to 4 days to 3 days to 2 days. And now I just do 1 day, which I kind of balance with my business. But I think like I gave myself like permission to be like, it's okay to drop one day.
You don't have to flog yourself.
Earn a little bit less money, or I think I was nervous to do it because all my friends around me were like pushing more in terms of industry and their careers.
So you were swimming against the tide almost.
Peer pressure is powerful, isn't it?
I wonder if there's a stat, and so this is sort of a bit of an aside. I wonder if taller dentists get more backaches.
It has to be.
Yeah. I mean, I would have thought so. It sounds like it. It feels like it. I'm just wondering, you know, you're nearly 5'10 or something. I just wonder whether there's more incidence of back injuries in men because they're normally taller and taller women than there are in shorter people.
I know many years ago we moved house and I went and registered with the local GP, and he went and said, oh yeah, everything looks great, you know, I think you're going to be fine. And literally as I went to leave his surgery, he said, oh, by the way, he said, you're quite a tall chap, because I'm 6'3". He said, you're quite a tall chap. He says, make sure that you kind of don't put on too much weight. Try and stay in shape, because that will help you in later life with back injuries. And it always stuck with me that yeah, I will have a longer spine than some because I'm taller. And yeah, it wouldn't surprise you at all.
So I was thinking, because you're tall, I was thinking, oh, that's interesting. I wonder if there must be a correlation, because even though you can move the chair up and down, you're still, you've only got a certain point you're bending over, aren't you?
Yeah.
You were saying about
anyway,
you reduced the days because of how you felt. I guess a slight shame in there is you have to feel there has to be kind of, you know, almost like upset and amount of trauma before you make that decision. And you were saying that kind of because lots of the people working around you were pushing harder and doing more. Do you think if you hadn't got to that position, you would just carried on working and perhaps remained unhappy?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And that's like why, like to this day, I think that like it's that cliche saying that everything happens for a reason, or every kind of negative experience you have, I think it always leads to a positive one, or you need to find how it does actually bring you opportunity. Like there is out, like how the last 10 years have been for me, I would never change it, because right now, like I feel amazing. I feel amazing in terms of how I can balance two careers, but I'd had to go through multiple very, very low points. One of those low points being like last year, and one of those low points being probably around that time where I had to like make the decision. I mean, also at that time I was doing a diploma in restorative dentistry, and I just you know, invest a lot of money in that. And again, I don't really remember why I really chose to do it. I think again everyone around me maybe
so you thought need yeah. something they're
let's,
doing it yeah
let's
yeah.
spend 17-18k on a course because this is supposed to be my path, I guess. I didn't actually end up completing that. I completed 70-80% of that, passed all the exams, but when COVID hit, I had an opportunity to continue with it or stop. And again, that was like my second time where I had to make a decision for myself. Like the first one was like, okay, leave and drop down one day. And this was like, do I want to carry on with this? Is this what I want to do? Or am I happy to kind of say no and kind of quit? And I think it's hard to quit, but I've learned now that quitting doesn't mean failure. Sometimes you need to stop something or quit something because it's not the right thing for you. It doesn't mean that you've failed, but it's taken me a lot of kind of time to really recognize that, because at school I was only told that you need to pass, you need to pass, you need to finish, you need to finish.
I think you're right. I think sometimes the brave thing is to stop doing something. But when you're surrounded by people who are all behaving in a particular way, that's not always easy.
That's very tricky.
I was going to say, it takes a brave person to do that. So during the COVID period, you said that kind of you had a reset and you sort of spent a bit of time working on yourself and your personal development. And you said that, you know, they kind of manifested itself in some sort of mental health issues with, you know, how you felt about yourself and your self-confidence. Through that period, you obviously got some help. What did that support look like during that period? Because it sounds like for you, it was a tough past couple of years.
Yeah. So during COVID, obviously, I think, so it was like the slight aftermath of COVID. So us working through COVID, it was a lot of, I was in the practice kind of on my own on some days, and we weren't allowed to have two dentists in at once at one point because of fallow time and everything. And in that period of COVID, that's not when I realized that my mental health was deteriorating, but I think it wasn't, I didn't seek the help then. It's only over maybe the last year or two where I started to get that more support. I think during that time, it was very go, 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 go at work that I didn't think I even had that much time for myself. So I think the impact of how work was, I was bringing that home to my home life. Mm-hmm. And that's not what you want. I remember coming home and I wanted...
Were you married at this time?
I was married and I remember you know, my husband's always been so amazing and supportive, but I would come home and I would be in a bit of a daze from just the maybe a bit of shock, and I wanted to go into my own room. I didn't want to talk. And then if I did talk, you know, it wasn't fair. I would take it out on my husband. And I was becoming like a person who I didn't really want to become. So I think it just was impacting on how I was feeling, how we were also going through, you know, some personal fertility issues as well. And I think that probably impacted it. And I think I just always remember on a Sunday night, I would be in bed and all I could think about was who am I seeing the next day? What's on my patient list? What did I do wrong the other day? And then I wasn't able to be present and happier,
There's a world outside the surgery, isn't there? Yeah. There is a world outside the surgery.
They say that about being in the present, don't they? Rather than being somewhere else.
Yeah. And then I would say over the, not this year, over 2023, I think that was another kind of down point for me. And I think work got to a point where, you know, I was only doing 2 days at work. So I felt almost quite embarrassed to feel how I was feeling. How can I feel stressed out at work when I've cut down from 5 to 4 to 3 days, 3 days? I kept kind of feeling quite bad about how can I still be feeling like this? And early last year, I got to a point where I even started to have panic attacks on the way to work. Sometimes even at work. And I was like, I think that was my turning point, which is I need to stop, take a career break in dentistry, figure out.
But isn't it fascinating how we put ourselves under so much stress and pressure before we make the change? We don't, from what you said, it sounds like you were aware of these changes. You know the impact it was having you, but it has to present itself as quite a serious, physical reaction before you actually stop and then make a change.
I think you also credit for actually doing it.
Yes.
You know, there's so many people who probably would feel like you, but were just doing that, that, well, just blunder on and I'll just keep going. And then they do that for the next 30 years and they're completely all burn out halfway through. You know that lady we spoke to?
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
I have colleagues like that as well. I have friends who kind of, they're not quite at my point or near my point, but they maybe don't see a way out, but I want to tell them there is a way out because you have complete control of how you want to live your life. If you're not happy or if your body is not working the way it should be because of the amount of stress you're putting on yourself, then, you can do something about it.
I suppose there's also financial motivation in there, isn't there, as well? You know, you go from 5 days where you're earning, I know, £100,000 to one day where you're earning £20,000. And it's another factor that people, and I suppose if you've built your lifestyle around 100,000. It's an interesting one, isn't it? You know, what are people going
to
do?
Yeah.
So then you drop yourself to one clinical day, but then you also start a lifestyle and health business, which I find fascinating, because you said about, you know, your own confidence, how you feel about, you know, self-awareness, and it's a very bold step for somebody in your position, particularly having had perhaps a challenging couple of years running up to that.
Minor burnout.
I'm now going to put myself into a business. And I wonder whether perhaps this was your true calling. You felt able to do it because you were so passionate about it, whereas dentistry was kind of a job.
Yeah, no, exactly. It was during COVID where the dental practices closed down for those two or 3 months.
Yes, 23rd of March to the 8th of June.
Oh, that was interesting. And obviously we were doing our triage from home. And it was just that point where in February I was working amongst two practices, two days in one and 2 days in the other. And I had just handed in my resignation for one of them. So when March hit, COVID hit, I actually was like only now in one practice working 2 days a week. So I was just doing the triage for 2 days. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, like actually this could be that break that I need, slow down, reset. What do I want to do? Because you're just kind of churning, you know.
The hamster wheel, wasn't it, as they say? It's just a hamster wheel.
And actually, just for a period of time, for a few weeks, I felt a bit lost. I was like, oh my God, I'm at home. We're not allowed to leave our house. What to do? And I remember my husband coming into the living room saying, like, right, that's it. Like, I need to get you smiling. And he brought his A3 flip chart in and he said, like,
brilliant.
Just write down what you like, what you enjoy. Like, I didn't think that I was thinking of another career. I just wanted something to pass my time and do something that I enjoy. And I had been on my own health and fitness journey.
Wow.
I was working with a coach. So I'd got into, at the time, really good shape. And in terms of what I saw, that eating healthy, exercising, you know, all of those amazing things, I could see it was having more than just a physical impact on me. It was having a mental impact. So when I was more controlled around those things and incorporated them in my life more, I felt mentally stronger, better, happier. And so I started like a little social media page, just, you know, fitness tips, health and fitness tips, and how to look after your body and mind. And I would post my journey. I'd post me working out, I'd post workouts, I'd post healthy recipes, and all that kind of stuff. And at this time I was still working with my fitness coach because I had, you know, lots of strength goals I had. And he just kind of, you know, asked me one day, would you actually consider being a coach? Like, I'm having an opening with my coaching company. Would that be something that you're interested in? And the moment that someone just has like that confidence in you, like I would have never had that confidence in myself.
Sort of landed.
Yeah. And I was like, I've never even thought about that. I didn't even know that you're allowed a second career. You're allowed to even think about that. And so that's kind of how it all started, where he kind of put that confidence in me and I started kind of my own business, my own online business.
Brilliant.
And
what does your husband do?
My husband, oh God, I have to get it right because he works for a firm called KPMG and he's a management consultant, and his niche is more with healthcare. So he loves to work.
I just thought that was very thoughtful and as in quite inspirational, really. And also maybe I did wonder, where's he get an A3 flip chart from? It's not something you normally have in your cupboard. Oh, hang on a minute. That's brilliant. That is really good.
He's always been so supportive, and I think the coach was the one that kind of nudged me into that direction, but it was my husband. Like, I can't thank him enough for also him putting the confidence in me just to kind of put yourself out there, see where it goes. And that's one thing I would say. I never started this business knowing that I was going to create a business or that I was going to create a second career of it. I started it because I enjoyed it. I just started something that I enjoyed, and from there it kind of built into this amazing thing.
So what, in terms of health and lifestyle services for your clients, what is it? What do you do for them? What is your business?
Yeah, so I guess my I'm a body and lifestyle transformation coach. So I work predominantly with women who want to lose weight, feel great in themselves, feel confident about their bodies, who want to feel fitter, stronger, healthier. And a lot of women who come to me want those things for themselves, but they find it very hard to do that balancing, you know, work life. They're like, you know, professionals, home life, kids. So they have these goals for themselves, but how do I do it? How do I fit it around my life? So I'm there as a coach, not only to give them, you know, the guidance around their nutrition and exercise and give them their plans around that, but I coach them very personally, because everyone's going to live a different life, on how to navigate through life while still staying consistent with getting their exercise in and doing all this. And again, it's all about things like stress management, and we work on sleep. So it's a very holistic approach I take to help women get in the best shape that they want to, feel their best. And when people feel their best, like, it almost feels like anything is possible, right? When I felt my best, and when I got into really good shape, I mentally felt better, and I started to get confidence for things that I never thought I would ever be able to do. So I never thought, for example, as a woman, I would be able to go into the weights section of the gym with these big men staring at me. You know, I was like the skinny Asian late like girl, and I would like always be on the cardio machines hiding in the women's section. And then with my coach, I got the confidence to do deadlifts and pull-ups and all these, you know, amazing things. So I was like, hang on a minute. That means when I thought I couldn't do something, I can do something. And I wanted to work with people who kind of felt like the same. And once I did that, more things in life felt possible. So getting into shape, looking after my body, feeling healthier, started to leak into other parts of my life in a positive way. And that's what I want to promote with my clients.
Do you enjoy your one day of dentistry now?
I do. So I actually completely stopped for 6 months over the last year. And I got to a point where I thought I was going to quit completely.
Right.
And I thought, I got to a point where, like, I don't think this is for me. I don't think I'm good enough. I can't do it. But when, again, I decided just to give myself a reset and a break, and I gained some support from others to kind of coach me into maybe what my challenges around dentistry, I then again got the confidence to go back. And now I do my one day, and I feel so much more refreshed on that one day. And I feel I can give so much more to my patients. And in a way, my dentistry helped with my coaching, because with dentistry, I guess you're seeing patients and you're building up really good relationships, which I've managed to do with my clients. The one thing that is really important with my clients is they need someone to really listen to them. These are my presenting problems, and how can you help me? And I think with the dentistry side of things, when I was so wrapped up with seeing 40, 50 patients a day, go in and it was like, they're telling me their problems, but I'm also like, okay, diet or hygiene, x-rays, tick, 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 tick. So I was ticking boxes in that 10, 15 minutes I had, rather than really listening to them. And I think coaching has then leaked in back into my dentistry. And I'm like going in and I'm just so much, I have a better ear for my patients. And I've seen how much better feedback that I've been receiving since I've been able to do that. And it feels nicer to work with my patients now.
Yeah, do you think there's a place in dentistry for the non-dental services that you offer? Do you think there's other dentists out there that would benefit from this and would end up with a more fulfilling clinical career? Outside of the kind of the obvious health, diet, well-being, do you think it actually might? Because it sounds to me like this has kind of, you know, moved you on in terms of your enjoyment of clinical dentistry.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think I think there's not a lot out there, because I think with dentistry, people think that this is just, I think when you're so, when you're just a bit of a workaholic with it, it's very hard to see outside of the box and realize that you can find little tips. You can do little things in your day just to look after yourself. What we don't realize is things that we do, small habits that we do every day, whether it's like what I used to do, which was like bend over a little bit two more and just to get to that distal surface and like just, you know, hurt my neck a bit more. Even in that moment, it might not be causing you problems. Even for like the next couple of months, it won't. But later down the line is how that's going to impact you. So what can we do in the days, in the weeks, just to make life feel a bit better for yourself?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It sounds like you've changed quite a lot as a person through your life, from the person who had your childhood when found uni quite tough and then COVID. Have you got to a place now where you're comfortable feeling uncomfortable?
Yeah, definitely. Like, even, you know, I mentioned to you before doing this podcast that I was a little bit nervous about doing it, even though I'd done one or two before. But I think I have realized, and this is again what I share with my clients, that if you want change for yourself, if you're unhappy in your current position, the only thing that you can really do is step a little bit outside of your comfort zone. Otherwise, you're not going
to. You have to change something, don't you?
You have to change something. And it might be really tough. Like, you might not feel confident to do something, or, you know, you don't even know your decision, how that and what it might look like. But yeah, I think I've learned to get uncomfortable. You have to get uncomfortable. And you know what? You don't have to feel uncomfortable on your own. If you're going through that period of change, get some support, get some help. Through every stage of my life in terms of like change, I've always had someone to help me. So for example, when I wanted to get into better shape or go to the gym and lift weights, I got a coach, I got support. When dentistry wasn't going so well for me, I reached out to a mentor. He helped me. When mentally I wasn't in a good place, but I wanted change for myself, I had a therapist. I've had therapy. Like, so if it feels a bit scary to make changes on your own and do get out of your comfort zone on your own, you don't have to do it on your own. So you can reach out.
Why as a species are we particularly bad at prioritizing our own well-being? We're not good at it, are we? We always find a reason to just keep busy or push it to the side or I'll be okay type thing. Well, why is that?
I think it's like sometimes our definition of like success, like just to keep going, empowering through. And that's how I felt. Like, I felt I would be a failure if I didn't power through.
And I think some of this does get fed through social media. You know, if you're not in the 5 o'clock in the morning club,
You're not in Dubai.
If you don't have 4 side hustles and you're not doing 20 things at once, then you know, you're just not worthy. That's not helpful.
Which are unsustainable.
Oh, it's cobblers. It's absolute cobblers. But sadly, there's a lot of that getting pushed through different channels.
Yeah, definitely. And I think even as dentists, we find it hard to prioritise ourselves. Like, I've worked with a couple of clients who are dentists, and even myself, like, we put our patients first. That's what we're taught to do. We're good people. And so we'd rather see an extra 5 patients in the day. We'd rather squeeze everyone in. We'd rather bend over a little bit more or spend more time at our desk. I think that's another reason we kind of put others first before us. That's kind of the type of profession that we're in.
Just
caring profession.
It is. Yeah. And just to finish up, I'd love some time management tips from you, because you work clinically, you have your health and lifestyle business, you're going through a major refurb of a house at the moment, and you and your husband are expecting your first child, which is wonderful news. Yes. How the heck do you manage the whole thing? Because that's
She's gonna get the A3 flip chart.
Yeah. So what are your time management tips to kind of make sure that everything keeps happening?
So again, this is where I think that it's so good to think about getting yourself into shape, even if it's not from a physical point of view, from a mental discipline point of view. So like with clients, when they've got lots going on, I think time blocking and scheduling is a very important thing for me. So planning ahead of time. So when I'm getting clients to get fit in their workouts or do their meal prep and do their meal planning, they have to sit back and really think about their day. I kind of get them to visualize their week. How is your week going Monday through to Friday? So I literally on a Sunday sit down and I write down exactly what's happening Monday through to Friday. So like to the point where what time am I starting work? What time am I finishing work? What time I want to go to bed, what time I want to wake up. And then you will find little areas of time where you can do that half an hour workout, where you can do that meal prep. You're not, I know we always say to ourselves, we don't have enough time or I can't find enough time, but we're up for like, I don't know, 16 hours in the day. You're probably working like, I don't know, 8 hours, 9 hours, maybe more for some people. There's some other hours, the half an hour of Netflix, the 1 hour of Instagram scrolling. So
the time's there. It's just what we do with it, isn't it?
Yeah. It's so time blocking and time scheduling and having a pre-plan, because if you decide on the day, okay, tonight I'm probably going to try and get to the gym. I'll just see how it goes. It's probably not going to happen because your day gets ahead of you. And
that doesn't sound very committed, does it?
You never get around to it.
I might try and get to the gym. I'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
We all know how that ends up.
Yeah. If you plan the day before, you're almost kind of like writing it in your brain, like tomorrow, if I start work at 8:30, then I need to kind of get up at 6:30 to be at the gym for 7:45, come home and shower and go. Obviously,
it's making a contract with yourself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because if we had a meeting with somebody else, we wouldn't let them down. If we had an appointment with a coach or somebody, we wouldn't let them down. Yet when we're doing things for ourselves, we easily let ourselves down because we just don't think that we're that important. Whereas I think you're right. I think if you write it down and make it as an appointment, even if nobody else is attending, it's much more likely to
have an accountability partner that gives you a hard time.
Yeah.
And if it feels important to you, like if you think like, it, make it a priority. Like you said, it's that special meeting with yourself. Like when I go to the gym, if a friend is calling me like as I'm there, you know, you can choose to answer your call at the gym and then just, you know, relax and your gym time is gone. Or you can just say, hey, I'll call you back later.
Yeah.
I'll call you back in half an hour on my terms, in my time, rather than let that interfere in your time. You're not going to take your friend's call, like you said, when you're in a meeting.
Yeah.
This is also
it's no different. Absolutely.
It's our coasters, isn't it, that we've got on our desk.
Yeah.
When we used to work for the bank, they had this whole thing about the fact of that you never get round to it. You just, you know, unless you actually specify it, you never end up with time to do it. So they created these sort of like round coasters and they used to call them round to it, and they'd write on it and say, this is your round to it. So as I'm going to remind you, you have to plan. So I think it's quite a clever thing because you think, oh, it's a round to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because people are looking at, what are you talking about? No, it's just a prompt to remind me that I need to plan.
Sinéad, we get to a point in our episode with you where we have to ask you two questions because no one's allowed to leave without answering them. So our first question for you is, if you could be the fly on a wall in a situation, where would that be and who would be there?
It would probably have to be with being a fly on my wall through my grandma, my dad's mom, her journey from being like an immigrant in India and coming over to England. So she always loves to share her stories with me. And when we talk about mental resilience, like, yes, I've gone through stress through my work and everything like that here, but she was in a place where she was 9 or 10 years old in India when there was war going on, where she would see every day people getting killed, houses around her being burnt down. She's told me she's seen knife incidents. She had 7 days without food, so much going on. And she even said to me, because of all this happening during the war, I wasn't able to get schooling or education. And I really wish I got to have that. So to know like what my grandma's gone through, I almost want to be a fly on a wall to just to watch her resilience. How did you get through all of this? You know, how did you feel? It's one thing her telling me, but to actually be there and watch all of this happening, and we've not experienced that kind of different type of danger here, right? So that would be interesting.
Oh, I think that was hugely interesting. And if you could meet somebody, you could sit back in a nice comfy chair and have a chat with somebody, who would you like to meet?
I'd like to meet Little Sinéad. Who was probably at school or, you know, a younger Sunaina where she didn't think that she was good enough. She didn't know what she wanted. She was very doubtful of herself. And just how little Sunaina, like, life planned out the way it should have planned out, life planned out well, and you don't have to worry about anything. That's what I'd say.
Wow.
That's lovely.
That's deep.
A little bit deep.
Yeah, it is. A lot of people are just talking about Jurgen Klopp or something.
Yeah. I bet those people are thinking, wow.
Oh, I wish I'd have been deeper. Flip.
Sunaina, it's been lovely talking to you. Honestly, I think it's great. I think the crossover... for you being a dentist into your new business, I think will be fascinating for our listeners. And I think there's a real lesson in there for everybody to make sure that they do look after themselves in whatever that looks like, with better diet, better sleep, going to the gym, talking to friends, trying to unburden, not carry stress around, whatever that looks like for them. I think everybody can kind of get better as a result of this. And yeah, and good luck with your business. Good luck with impending parenthood, the house renovation, continuing to be a dentist. So, but no, it's been lovely to spend your time too.
Yeah.
So
your planning's not so great.
I know. Thank you so much.
No, brilliant. No, it's been brilliant. Thank you very much.
Look after yourself. Keep well.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.